Welcome to Unpacking the Digital Shelf, where we explore brand manufacturing in the digital age.
Hey everyone, Peter Crosby coming to you from snowy Cape Cod. Rob is on from the even snowier Berkshires. How is it out there, Rob?
It's very snowy, 18 inches.
Holy.
It's about half the height of my daughter who cannot, loves snow and can't actually move around in it. There's so much snow.
That's awesome. The best memes I've been seeing on like Twitter today are dogs loving the snow, which makes me very happy.
Yeah, dogs do love snow.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. Hey, winter. Well, Rob, to move on to business for the podcast, I saw a headline in Business Insider last week that really caught my attention. Jeff Bezos and Amazon execs have discussed launching a rival to Shopify, whose meteoric rise has increasingly intruded on the online giant's turf. That was Eugene Kim in Business Insider. What do you think? They already tried to do that once, right, with Amazon Web Store?
2015. Yeah, I mean, you look, in the 2000s, I remember at Endeca, you know, we built Target and Target Search and Nav and Walmart Search and Nav, Home Depot Search and Nav, and so on and so forth. Target had actually originally outsourced its web presence to Amazon. So Target.com in the mid-2000s was hosted on Amazon in a version of this, right? So Amazon was basically saying, look, we've got core technology for hosting an e-commerce presence. We've got search algorithm. We've got the ability to store catalog. We've obviously got a shopping cart, blah, blah, blah. Why don't we host other people's websites too? And ultimately, any retailer of size realized that existentially they needed to control their own web presence and didn't want to have their web presence owned by a competitor. It's kind of funny in retrospect to think Target and Amazon cooperating with each other.
Yeah.
I generally think that when Amazon goes head to head with a market leader, they tend not to do that well.
Yeah.
And I'll give you examples. They wanted for years and years to out-compete eBay with auction. Never worked. Ultimately what ended up happening is even today, they don't out-compete eBay with auction. They just found another market for the third-party seller market, which ended up being bigger than eBay's, right? But eBay still, basically, you can't compete with them on auctions. Another example is, and this is more in the weeds, but MongoDB is one of the better tech IPOs of the last 10 years. Really, really excellent NoSQL database. Amazon released a version of a database compatible with MongoDB hosted on AWS to go head-to-head with MongoDB. And MongoDB has fought off that threat and is more valuable than ever. And so I'm pretty skeptical when Amazon looks at a business model and says, oh, I'm going to replicate that business model and go after it. Because there's not a tremendous amount of track record of success there. A company like go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I can see why they'd be turning their Sauron eyes over there, though. I mean, Benedict Evans posted a chart saying this year's sales on Shopify will probably be 40 to 45% of sales on Amazon Marketplace. And that's tremendous growth.
It's tremendous growth. I mean, hats off to them. And, Shopify is a Canadian startup. It's in Ottawa. It's worth well over $100 billion right now. And I bought their stock at IPO and then sold it when they were not that much bigger. Really, really kicking myself now. But the reality is that the Shopify product, it's a hard product to build.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like Shopify is just some crappy SaaS SMB e-commerce platform. It's a lot of tech. I mean, they came up in a space where there were a lot of other e-commerce platforms that were out there. There was Magento, which was free, open source and the market leader. There's BigCommerce that competes with Shopify up and down the market today. There's like a dozen others. And so in a crowded space with a lot of people whose entire businesses depend on beating Shopify in some way, shape, or form, Shopify is still dominant. Yeah. So it's pretty hard to see Amazon just throwing a shopping cart together that they can license out as a SaaS product and really just compete with Shopify on market share. It's an incredible company. They've got over 1 million stores on it today. Over 1 million.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well, I wanted to go check out to see, you know, what Shopify had to say about Amazon. And this is from 2019. CEO Toby Lutke said, if anything, Amazon is trying to build an empire and Shopify is trying to arm the rebels. What do you think of that Star Wars reference?
Well, what's the old quote? One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter or whatever.
Yep, all you can be.
So I, you know, I think it's a cute quote. I think it's, I disagree with it. Amazon has created more millionaires in America than any other company in history, because so many people on Amazon Marketplace have built businesses and become millionaires. I think the second place, if I remember correctly, was Subway. It's like, you know, franchise owners of Subway in the 90s in particular created a lot of millionaires in America. And so I, you know, if Amazon's creating more millionaires than any other company ever, then it's not exactly like Amazon's not good for mom and pop business owners and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think Amazon Marketplace and Shopify both in their own ways enable businesses to thrive in America. For me, it's like arm the rebels. I don't know. That's, it's cute, but I don't know that I agree with it.
Well, in an article from Adweek, Lisa Lacey, she interviewed Emily Pfeiffer, you know, a wonderful analyst for B2C at Forrester. We work with her a lot. And, you know, she was pointing out that brands typically only see a single digit percentage of sales through their own websites, whether, you know, they're hosting them or they're on Shopify. So they need Amazon and other online marketplaces and traditional retail to make up the rest. Like, you know, if you want to get new customers that you're not driving to your own site, the place to go is where they have a lot of customers who are looking for stuff. And that's where Amazon's business model comes through.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, I'm going to take what you just said and build on the last statement, which is customer acquisition is the hardest problem.
Yeah.
There is, right? And if you're a small business owner, that's the whole ball game. Amazon has a huge audience. So if you're a mom and pop, or you've got a new product to offer the market, then that's a good place to go, because there's a lot of customers there. You know, there's a lot of search happening on Amazon, and you can buy ads and you could drive traffic to your PDPs and you could build businesses that way. I mean, I think the biggest business built on Amazon is Anchor, which is worth over $11 billion today. And it was really just an Amazon brand for a long, long time. And so, you know, one way to start a business is to start it on Amazon, and you've got a built-in audience. If you go direct to consumer with a Shopify site, that's hard. That's pretty hard. You've got to build your customer base some other way. And traditionally it was through Instagram. It was through developing compelling content that was shareable. It was through Facebook and Facebook advertising. It was through Google and, you know, Google advertising and pay-per-click. It was by galvanizing an audience on Kickstarter. It was by using newsletters. It was by using a fan base that you already had. I mean, there's a lot of different ways, but, you know, the going the Shopify route gives you a direct relationship that's unmitigated with your customer. The margins are better for you, but customer acquisition is a lot harder. And so depending on the product that you've got and the category and all this sort of stuff, I don't know that one is necessarily universally better than the other. I think both can be good options for the right business.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason, you know, you were talking about Amazon's built-in audience, and there's a reason why their forecast for their ad revenues went from, by 2022, to be, originally they said in June it was going to be like 20 billion in ad revenue, and now they're predicting almost 25 billion by 2022. I mean, there's a reason, and it's because they have the audience to talk to and they got the targeting data, et cetera.
Yeah. And I mean, think about it this way too. Shopify is going up market with Shopify Plus. Yeah. So they're serving more enterprises these days. And if you're like a Procter & Gamble or a Unilever or a Coca-Cola or whatever, like, you're just not going to host your website on Amazon. Like, there's no way you're going to trust Amazon enough to do that. You're going to be worrying about them. using your data against you, even if they swear to their blue in the face that they're not going to. So you're gonna use Shopify, you're gonna use BigCommerce, you're gonna use Salesforce Commerce Cloud, you're gonna use VTEX, you're gonna use literally any other company that's out there that's neutral, that's a tech provider, that's not Amazon. So I don't know. I mean, it's hard to see the market for Amazon that would really embrace having an e-commerce platform that is Amazon built that doesn't have Amazon's audience, but has these other risk factors, right? I don't quite understand what the play is there.
Yeah, I mean, one of the people that they talked to in the Adweek article, a guy named Faisal Masood, who's now CEO of commerce platform Fabric, he was pointing out that the potential that Shopify has is to take all of Shopify's network of consumers that have sort of signed up for the app, et cetera, and start combining and curating brands together. Like his quote was, if you're selling a Buck Mason shirt and want to cross sell with an Allbirds sneaker, why not? Why would you not do that? So you can sort of see, and I think Shopify could be potentially very good at this, at creating sort of these curated, specialized experiences cross brand that would drive value across a bunch of different retailers.
Yeah, it's a really interesting idea. I mean, Shopify has been doing more stuff over time that's cross-brand. So I buy a lot direct from manufacturers. I mean, we work with manufacturers. I'm a huge fan of manufacturers. If I've got a space in the market where I have empathy and loyalty, it's to the manufacturer and not the retailer so much. And if you buy on Shopify sites nowadays, your buying information is saved by Shopify across Shopify sites.
Yeah.
So the checkout experience, even though the relationship is owned directly by each individual brand and they can email me separately and all this sort of stuff, my payment information and shipping information is shared across the sites.
It's a great
which experience. Means that it's a great experience, right? And so Shopify is starting to do these network plays. They also launched that website for product discovery, which was an attempt to basically compete with Amazon's search algorithm as a place to start your shopping journey. You know, go to this site, search across all the Shopify sites for all the products. You find one you like, then you click through to the individual Shopify site. I think they're really just getting started in that front. But I mean, generally speaking, Amazon's reputation these days, in terms of the antitrust stuff in Europe, using data to compete with the third-party marketplace sellers on the platform and all this sort of stuff. It's just hard to see them producing a SaaS product where they're able to really overcome the concerns that people will have.
Yeah.
Not only that, but Shopify has been around for 15 years. So it's not like they've spent 15 years not building software. Their product is excellent. Right.
They know how to do it. Well, I just felt when I saw that headline and I think about sort of, we talk a lot here and we'll continue in 2021 to talk about the omnichannel, the digital first omnichannel opportunity for brands and the need to show up in a bunch of different places. And it's no longer going to be, it's not going to be either or, it's going to be and. And the question is, what is the audience at each channel and how do you specifically serve and create shopping experiences that make sense to that audience? And it's a big challenge, but I think it's also exciting. It puts the brands much more in the driver's seat in terms of their own destiny.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's the idea that Amazon has to dominate direct to consumer in addition to dominating retail search and retail advertising and retail 3P. It's just silly. I mean, like ultimately consumers want choice. Americans as a culture don't like power centralization and they'll always be, whether it's their people look them as rebels, like Toby Lutka says or whatever, there's going to be a plurality of retailers that matter. Amazon's not going to be the only retailer. And so I don't know, it feels to me like if I were Amazon and I wanted to help drive branded experiences, I would spend a little bit more time on those brand pages on Amazon and figure out a way to make those valuable.
Yes.
I mean, I go to those things sometimes and man, they're just not great.
Yeah.
They could be useful. They could be great, but they're not.
Yeah. And I do, there's opportunities like really doing, live marketing well on the site, live selling on the site, you know, like you know, I mean, I know clearly North America and sort of the Western world is a different culture than in China, where Alibaba and Tmall are big, but the live interaction with shoppers and live presentations right in the experience, I think there's a powerful thing to for them to invest in there that goes more towards their wheelhouse.
We'll yeah, see. I agree. I mean, it's not like, you know, Amazon is the, you know, and not or culture, if there ever has been one in the universe.
Yeah.
So it's like, why not do both? Why not do all of the things? They're going to do all the things.
Try and fail, try and succeed. Yeah, they just keep going.
It's fine. It's like if they try this direct to consumer thing and spend $1 billion on it and it doesn't work, fine. But if it does work, they make a ton of money. It's basically, on some level, it's Amazon having an option call on what has become a big market. Yeah, and so from that perspective, it's a totally rational thing to do for Amazon, even if the odds are stacked against them. And so I don't think it's a bad strategy move. I think they're being smart, but I also don't think it's going to work. I'm putting my bet down on the table that it's not going to work. And I wish they would focus other places.
Well, with that letter to Jeff Bezos, back to him, we were talking about, you know, the ability to control your own destiny. And so I want to take a second to thank someone who's helped us control ours for the past 6 months and is about to go control hers, Annie Shum, who had been our production assistant through a co-op program at Northeastern University. This is her last episode with us. Annie, are you there?
Yes, here I am. I've had a fantastic time helping you both. Just thank you so much for this opportunity. Thanks, Liz. I've really realized that going into e-commerce is the next step for my career. So I can't wait to see how this podcast will grow.
I can't believe that we didn't scare you off from e-commerce. Why is that your choice? What did you get?
I just love that it's like a growing and new industry. People aren't afraid to experiment. And I think that's what really interests me.
Well, I'm speaking for myself. If anyone out there is looking for raw talent who's had experience in e-commerce with us and certainly has a marketing brain, Annie Shum, she's on LinkedIn, S-H-U-M. That's where I should send them, right, Annie?
Yes, thank you.
Great. Well, Rob and I both just sincerely appreciate you keeping us on track and getting the word out about the podcast. You know, you also did all of the social posts and I've built our content library. So we can't thank you enough.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Annie does all the real work. Peter and I just mostly try not to embarrass ourselves.
And
mostly.
Yes, mostly. And as a result of us continuing to embarrass ourselves all year, we're actually going to unplug next week. We won't be posting an episode next week. Oh, well, yeah, for next week. And we're going to take that week off. But we'll be back on January 4th with a new episode to begin 2021. Thanks, Annie, for being part of our community. And thanks, as always, to all of you for being part of the DSI community.